So tonight we are to consider the third in our series of the Gospel of Luke. Last week's topic we considered Jesus as a man of prayer, and this week we'll be looking at the trial, crucifixion, and resurrection. So by way of introduction, I'll be reading a few passages from the relevant section. But to begin with, we'll introduce tonight's remarks by reading from Luke chapter 22 and from verse 39 until verse 65. So we've just introduced there, right up to the time of the trial, which we are to consider this evening. And we'll come back to that passage in just a moment. Certainly the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ are the most important events in human history, after perhaps the creation itself. And when considering these events and how they apply to our own lives, it helps us to remember that, of course, they mirror our own expectations of death and our own hope for resurrection. Together with the preceding trial of Christ, they help us to put our own lives in perspective, and they help us to understand God's immeasurable grace in providing Jesus for our redemption. Tonight, through the prism of the Gospel of Luke, we hope to understand these events a little better, but also to understand the perspective of the author and what that lends to the narrative. So a little about Luke himself, and I'm sure we've already been introduced, so I won't spend too long on this. Little is known about the man himself, but the following are traditionally supposed. Certainly he was an educated man, in fact a doctor by profession. He's referred to by the Apostle Paul as a beloved physician. However, it seems that he left this profession to become a disciple of Paul. In fact, Paul also refers to him as a co-worker. Luke is the author of this eponymous Gospel of Luke, but also the Acts of the Apostles. And it seems, unusually for the Gospel records, that Luke did not know Jesus personally, but rather compiled his account from eyewitnesses. The account is written in what is referred to as idiomatic Greek, which I understand is grammatically correct and well written. And this contrasts with the perfectly literate but less refined tone of the other Gospels. And it's probably useful to bear in mind Luke's relative distance from the facts of the time when we consider records such as these of the emotive events of the crucifixion and the trials. Perhaps we could say that Luke provides a useful objective view. Now, we've just read how Luke introduces the time of the trial and crucifixion. Verse 39 of chapter 22, the disciples and Jesus retired to that place, which we understand from the other Gospels to be the Garden of Gethsemane. We read also how Jesus prays. He prays earnestly, "Let this cup pass from me." Now, famously in this section, in verse 51, Luke records that Jesus heals the servant's ear, which one of his disciples cut off. Now, this act of healing is not recorded in the other Gospels. Perhaps this medical detail then betrays the author's profession and his habit of good record keeping. That's probably the most famous example unique to Luke from this passage. But there are two other unique aspects to Luke's record from here. We notice from verse 44 that Luke records that Jesus' sweat was like drops of blood. Possibly this is a metaphor, but possibly it does actually refer to a real condition. It has a medical name, which I shall try to pronounce, as hematohidrosis, which is the condition of actually sweating blood. And one of the causes of this condition is excessive physical or mental exertion. So we get a sense from the passage with Luke's medical insight into the exertion and the emotion which Jesus was experiencing at this time. And the other clue is in verse 45, where the other Gospels simply record that the disciples were sleeping. Luke records that they were exhausted by sorrow. And this certainly is a less unusual condition, but again, it's only recorded by Luke as what you might describe as a medical detail. So Luke introduces the trial of Christ. Now, this trial happened in several stages. The first stage was the meeting of the Sanhedrin. Now, we stop reading at verse 65. The meeting of the Sanhedrin, Luke records from verse 66 until the end of the chapter, which I'll just read to you now. Luke 22, verse 66. At daybreak, the council of the elders of the people, both the chief priests and teachers of the law, met together, and Jesus was led before them. "If you are the Christ," they said, "tell us." Jesus answered, "If I tell you, you will not believe me. And if I asked you, you would not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the mighty God." They all asked, "Are you then the Son of God?" He replied, "You are right in saying I am." Then they said, "Why do we need any more testimony? We have heard it from his own lips." Now, the other Gospels seem to record this trial of the Sanhedrin as occurring the same night of the arrest, which we read about by way of introduction. They don't actually specify the time of the trial, but it follows on in the narrative, so we assume it happened that evening. Luke, in fact, suggests that the trial happened the next day. We read in verse 66 that the council of the elders met at daybreak. Another difference between Luke's gospel and the other records is in the timing of Peter's denial. Now, the other gospels record Peter's denial as happening after the trial, but Luke records Peter's denial first of all, and the trial as happening after. Now, if this order of events is accurate, then even though we know that Jesus knew these events would come to pass, I imagine it would be somehow more difficult to face his Jewish accusers after having witnessed one of his closest friends publicly disown him, even if he'd previously known that was going to happen. The second stage, then, of Jesus' trial is that of Jesus before Pilate. And this is recorded in Luke 23, verse 1 to 16. And this I'll also read for us now. Luke 23 and from verse 1. Then the whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We have found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Christ, a king." So Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. Then Pilate announced to the chief priests and the crowd, "I find no basis for a charge against this man." But they insisted, "He stirs up the people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and has come all the way here." On hearing this, Pilate asked if the man was a Galilean. When he learned that Jesus was under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased, because for a long time he had been wanting to see him. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform some miracle. He plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there, vehemently accusing him. Then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him. Dressing him in an elegant robe, they sent him back to Pilate. That day, Herod and Pilate became friends. Before this, they had been enemies. Pilate called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I have examined him in your presence and have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back to us. As you can see, he has done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I will punish him and then release him." And so the record continues. Now, the Gospels agree here on the horrible and shameful treatment of Jesus at this point. He was mocked. He was dressed in a robe, as I suppose another element of mockery. He wore the crown of thorns, and he was beaten and hit around the face. So in these aspects, the Gospels agree. Where Luke differs from the others is that he is the only writer to mention the involvement of Herod. Matthew's Gospel does mention the governor, which we might assume is the same person, but Luke identifies the man as Herod, where we read in verse 12 how this event surrounding Jesus' trial and crucifixion led to Herod and Pilate becoming friends. And perhaps this view, this broader view, I suppose, shows the perspective of Luke as a later writer. But this also highlights the total opposition experienced by Christ at this time. Luke has identified both the Roman powers over Israel and the king who had been installed as a ruler of the area. So he's identifying Pilate and Herod as in agreement in opposition to Jesus. Naturally speaking, this was a completely hopeless situation. However, Luke does also highlight later on, so this would be in verse 26, I think, how there were a large number of women wailing for Jesus in his funeral procession. Now, this would have been a funereal tradition, but it does show perhaps how Jesus' message had reached some of the people, the low and despised, the people who were looked down upon by the rulers. And perhaps it's perhaps Jesus would have been a little consoled by this. We might struggle to imagine such a procession for an ordinary criminal in a similar situation. So possibly Luke here balances his account of Herod with the account of the wailing women. The third stage then in Jesus' trial is the crowds demanding that Barabbas be released instead of him. And all of the gospel writers agree that the Jewish people unanimously chose a rebel and a murderer over their anointed king. And this leads us to the crucifixion. And so I'll read again from Luke 23, verses 26 through to 49. Luke 23, verse 26. As they led him away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on the way in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. A large number of people followed him, including women who mourned and wailed for him. Jesus turned and said to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children, for the time will come when you will say, 'Blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if men do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him, along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." There was a written notice above him which read, "This is the king of the Jews." One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God," he said, "since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. It was now about the sixth hour, and darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, Surely this was a righteous man. When all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance, watching these things. And so the record carries on. Now, all of the gospel writers agree on a number of key points from this passage, that the cross was carried to Golgotha, or the place of the skull, that Jesus had two criminals crucified with him, that he was offered wine vinegar to alleviate the pain, that he had a sign above his head on which was written, King of the Jews. All the Gospels record that Jesus cried out, although the exact words recorded are slightly different. Matthew and Mark record, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which we know means, my God, why have you forsaken me? Whereas Luke records that Jesus said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. We also read that there was darkness over the land for 3 hours, that the temple veil was torn in two, which emphasizes the unparalleled gravity of the occasion. But there are a couple of aspects of this account which are unique to Luke. First, in verse 34, where Luke records that Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And then in verse 39 to 43, or just read verse 43. When Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise, where he's talking to the criminal who was with him. This Luke is the only gospel which records Jesus asking for forgiveness, first for his captors, and also for the criminal which was crucified with him. So here, I think Luke is highlighting that even at this terrible time, when sin was at its peak, human nature seemed to have triumphed. The Son of God was at the edge of death. Even at this terrible time, Jesus himself, and therefore God also, was concerned about the forgiveness of sins and of the redemption of mankind to him. And this insight is unique to the Gospel of Luke and provides an invaluable, and I'd say very uplifting, perspective. And that brings us on to the resurrection. Reading from Luke 24, verses 1 to 12. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee. The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again. Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. And so the chapter continues. So after the hectic, emotional, terrible events of Jesus' trial and crucifixion, where as we've read, the gospel accounts differ slightly in the focus of their remarks and the details they choose to bring out. Suddenly there is a great agreement in all the gospel accounts on the key events of the resurrection. All the writers agree that the faithful women went to the tomb and found it open. They all agree that men in white robes, and in Luke's gospel we read that the clothes were like lightning. These men greeted the women and gave them the wonderful news of the resurrection. And of course, all of the writers agree on the fact of the resurrection itself. And at this point, Matthew and Mark end their accounts with the ascension of Jesus into heaven. But Luke and John further record the famous events on the road to Emmaus and of Jesus' interactions with the disciples who he walked and ate with that day. These leave the reader with a wonderful vision of the joy and hopefulness which characterized the faith of those who endured after Jesus ascended to heaven and who began to spread the word of God. So I'd like to end by reading the last part of Luke chapter 24. From Luke chapter 24, verse 45. Then he opened their minds so they could understand the scriptures. He told them, "This is what is written. The Christ will suffer and rise from the dead on the third day, and repentance and forgiveness of sins will be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things. I am going to send you what my Father has promised, but stay in the city until you have been clothed with power from on high." When he had led them out to the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and blessed them. While he was blessing them, he left them and was taken up into heaven. Then they worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy, and they stayed continually at the temple, praising God.